Hey, Rick Sanchez here. This is Direct Impact, and this is part of what we're going to be talking about.
Sometimes it's just about fucking winning, and it doesn't matter how we look
right
at this moment. It's about fucking winning.
Right.
This is about winning.
Yep. Now it is.
Winning. Did you get that? That's world-famous director Quentin Tarantino. He says when it comes to electing Kamala Harris, to hell with democracy. It's just win, baby. He literally broke our bleep machine here. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this thing. So we're going to begin with this sudden nasty feud with between the United States and Mexico, where Mexico is saying that the U.S. and Canada should mind its own damn business. Literally, President Obrador, the president of Mexico, seems to be saying that to the United States and to Canada, look, you have no right to involve yourselves in our political affairs. And that's what he says that they're doing. And because you're doing so, he seems to be saying, we are cutting off your ambassadors. We're no longer going to be dealing with your ambassadors.
Pero no es posible que este un embajador extranjero opine lo que está bien o lo que está mal en nuestro país. Esa no es la función de un embajador.
Why is their ambassador telling us what's good or what's bad in our country? That's not your job. It's our country, he seems to be saying, right? So what's going on here? What is Mexico doing that is so wrong that it has the United States and Canada screaming at Mexico about it? And that it apparently, according to the United States and Canada, it has to stop, because if not, it will be the end of democracy as we know it if they continue to do it, right? By the way, my own bias about this. Whenever I hear my country, or any country for that matter, complain about a lack of democracy somewhere, my, like, bullcrap antennas go straight up, right up. Democracy, socialism, fascism, authoritarianism, and most of those other isms are usually nothing more than bludgeoning tools that are used by governments and demagogues to frighten and deceive rather than inform. Okay, sorry, I had to get that out. That's my take. Whenever I hear people saying someone's a communist or someone's a socialist or someone's a fascist or democracy this and democracy that. But let me continue. Let me set this up for you. The guy in the ridiculous white hat that you're about to see is the ambassador to Mexico. His name is Ken Salazar. For the record, I know Ken. I've worked with him on a bunch of stuff, known him for many years as a journalist when he was a senator from Colorado. He's a politician and has always allowed himself to be a bit of a tool. But here he is reading this script that seems to be making Mexico very angry at him, at the U.S., and at Canada.
Creo que la elección directa de jueces representa un riesgo para el funcionamiento de la democracia de México y la integración de las economías de Estados Unidos, México y Canadá abajo del T-MEC. Cualquier reforma judicial debe tener las salvaguardas que garanticen que el poder judicial sea fortalecido y no esté sujeto a la corrupción de la política.
I know, the story's a little confusing, so here's what's going on. Mexico has a problem with corruption. Duh, not a secret to anybody, right? So it wants to change the way its federal judges are chosen. What the Mexican government wants to do is make sure the judges are elected by the people. The U.S. says that would politicize the elections and it would invite corruption. Wait, aren't they already corrupt? Yes, they are. Another thing, given what is going on right now with our own Supreme Court and allegations they are being bought and sold by billionaires, are we, is our country, our politicians in any place right now to be criticizing another country for their judicial system? Look, I'm not a legal expert, but just looking at it from abroad, given a choice between someone who is elected and owes his or her allegiance to the will of the people, as Mexico seems to want to do with this reform, or someone who is selected and owes their allegiance to corporations and government bureaucrats? I would take my chances with the people every time, imperfect as elections may be. I get it. Now, as for President Obrador being angry that the United States should not be complaining about this, I disagree with him. Look, I'm not one to not criticize governments, including our own, criticize our own State Department from time to time for going off on these far-off dictates in places like Iraq and Ukraine, which most Americans couldn't even find on a map. Probably 99% of Americans couldn't find on a map. But I do think we have a right to engage when it comes to a country that's literally right next door to us and is our number one trading partner. So on the one hand, I find the criticism kind of weird. Let me bring Manila in. Manila, I think what I get it. The United States is telling Mexico, we don't want you to reform your judicial system. Right now, that judicial system is appointed by politicians, essentially, like we do here with our federal judges. Mexico wants to change those, and the United States is freaking out about Mexico wanting to change that. I don't get it. Why? It seems like an overreaction. Why is the United States so angry about the United States, about Mexico changing how it chooses its federal judges?
So a couple of things are at play here, Rick. So let's go through them one by one. First, AMLO is on his way out. Claudia Sheinbaum has been elected. She's coming in, and she's what they say has been kind of groomed by him for years within the party. Yeah. They're of the same party, the Morena party. So she'll probably govern the same way and probably has the same views as Obrador. So in AMLO's case, he's on his way out, and he's burning all the bridges and the boats along the way. It's to hell with whatever anybody thinks. He's going to say what he wants to say at this point. That's kind of the stage that he's at as a lame duck. So I'm on Team AMLO here, where he's saying, hey, United States, butt out. Even if our corruption is corrupting the corruption that you choose to corrupt in our country,
right?
So what?
But
it's
why?
Our
But back to my question. Okay, I get all that. AMLO, this corruption,
right.
New president. Why? Why does the United States not want?
I'll get there.
Go ahead.
So the reason the corruption against the corruption of the corruption is a problem is because I'm going to say one country, China, and because of this new the policy that has replaced NAFTA, as you recall, a couple of years ago under President Trump, which is called the TMEC, T-M-E-C. It is that new U.S.-Mexico-Canada deal that is all about duty-free and tariffs. And China comes into play here because of one car company called BYD. They have become Mexico's largest automotive car market, is BYD. And they are now the seventh largest automotive industry in the world. And the problem here is if the Chinese get a foothold in the Mexican market.
What does that have to do with judges?
U.S. officials are U.S. officials are afraid that all the money from China is going to further push through the policies that they want, including, you know, the judges that are not then selected by U.S. money and U.S. influence by way of the politicians who select the judges there. All it is here is a big
So I think what you're saying is the reason the United States wants the system to remain the same is because under the present system, the United States and Canada have a hand in influencing or even choosing who those judges are. Once it's a real election, they will not be able to choose those people.
That's exactly right. And they're afraid that they're losing their grip not only to the people of Mexico, but to business interests by way of China, and that China will be creeping into the U.S. markets as well by way of Mexico. So the U.S. is really trying to clamp down and strengthen its stranglehold on its southern neighbor.
On its ability to control the judges, though. Forget about all that other stuff. I mean, really, it's all about
everything. The U.S. has control over all of that.
Okay. Speaking of democracy, let's talk about Quentin Tarantino. Who? Right. One of the best film directors in the entire world, says my son and a few other people I know who are film geeks. He says, and has come out and say it in very interesting terms, that when it comes to make sure that Kamala Harris gets elected, to hell with democracy. He is asked if it's right that candidate Harris is so rehearsed that she's not talking about her platform, that she's not doing news conferences, that she's not doing any interviews with reporters. And here is what Quentin Tarantino says. Listen.
It's just about fucking winning. And it doesn't matter how we look
right
at this moment. It's about fucking winning.
Right.
This is about fucking winning.
Yep. Now it is.
It's a mad fucking dash, and she is running, and she's not stopping to stumble.
And you know what?
And there's nothing wrong with stopping this. I'm going to vote for her anyway, no matter what she says in a stupid interview.
Exactly.
So don't f*** it up.
He's going to vote for her anyway, no matter what the hell she says. She could come out tomorrow and say, I'm a fascist, and I eat babies, and I'm also a communist on top of that, and he's still going to vote for her. And I'm going to start World War III tomorrow, and he's still going to vote for her, no matter what she says.
Wow.
Just win, baby. Now, here's what's interesting about this, and I think it's worth a discussion. She was never really elected. She came in last place when she ran for the Democratic ticket, which means her own party never picked her. She was given the candidacy when Biden dropped out, you know, without any competition. Okay, it is what it is, right? And now on top of all that, she doesn't have to explain her positions or do interviews with anybody. Now, you have to ask, and it's fair to say, that doesn't sound very democratic as we go around the world telling every other country how they have to be democratic. By the way, it's also a fair question for the Trump team to be asking right now, which it would if it wasn't so busy trying to do damage control because of this photo. Look at this thing. That image is making a lot of people, especially veterans, angry. Here's what happened. Mr. Trump did an event at Arlington National Cemetery for the soldiers who were killed in Afghanistan during the pullout. How smart, politically, for him to do that, by the way. And as a former president, he has every right to do that, to lay the wreath at Arlington National Cemetery for the soldiers. But then he may have crossed the line, figuratively and literally. That's what we're talking about here. He went with his photographers, the families, to where the soldiers have been recently buried, an area considered more sensitive, and he had this picture taken there, and, you know, with the thumbs up, and you can see there, I know the words are covering it up, but those are actually where the soldiers are buried. That's their tombstones there. Look, people are angry about this because of the optics. They think it was exploitive. They think it was in bad taste. There are reports that Mr. Trump's handlers got into an altercation with Arlington security officials. Bottom line, it's not a good look, right? And I can't help but ask myself, who is minding the store over there, Manila? I mean, the first rule in politics is don't provide your opponent with material that they can use against you. Why would they release that picture? Why would they take it? I mean, I'm always going to cover for you. If I see something, if I see a booger on your face, I'm going to tell you, hey, don't put that picture out there. I mean, I'm trying to understand who the hell put this out. Why?
Well, Rick, let's point out that it's also not a good look that Joe Biden, the current sitting president and commander-in-chief, did not attend this ceremony. The sitting vice president and the person running against Donald Trump, the sitting vice president, Kamala Harris,
yeah, but now you sound partisan.
That's also a bad look.
I guess, but I mean.
But that's also a bad look, is what I'm saying. But... So, I mean, they're focusing on Trump doing what Trump always does, which is this stupid same pose in every photo. I mean, just everywhere.
He's standing next to a dead body, Manila.
I mean. He's just got the same automatic response. And the families, if you look at the families, they were happy that he showed up. They were happy and they were doing the same pose as him. So we don't know, you know, if they were actually doing like a celebration of life moment, and it's their own private moment. That's fine. The problem that was happening at Arlington National Cemetery, which I've been to, that area, Section 60, the problem, the big scuttlebutt that's happening there is not because he's doing his regular thumbs up cheesy pose that he always does. It's that the photos are now being circulated and used within his campaign. And there's policies there at Arlington National Cemetery that strictly say these photos cannot be used for political purposes. And they're saying that this is being used for politics. Not so much that that he's doing so, the thumbs up and smiling.
So let me ask you. So let me ask you this: If you were his handler, you would have said, "Mr. President, I think it's a good idea for you to go over there, stand next to those dead bodies, and take some cheesy pictures with some people with your thumbs up, and then we're going to make sure that picture gets released to everybody so they can see it." When you already had a great moment with him laying the wreath before that, which was perfectly fine. Yes.
If I was playing that role, I would have specifically said, "Let's not smile. Can we have a solemn moment, you know, in honor of the fallen men and women
exactly.
here?" Exactly. But, you know, he just has some bad handlers around him, and the photographer could have been like, "Can we not smile at a grave?"
Right. Yeah. Can we change our appearance or something?
Can we not do that?
Listen, it's politics. Yeah. We're covering it. We got to hit both sides. There it is. All right. So, thank you. When we come back, the UN Security Council has just issued a warning to both Lebanon and Israel. It says both sides need to stop attacking each other because there's a high risk of widespread conflict. We're going to be talking to Leila Hatoum, who's going to be joining us from Beirut. Leila's a geopolitical analyst, editor-in-chief. There she is. We're going to be back with her in just a moment. Stay right there.
Здесь земля отверженных. Нам уже от нее не деться. Ветер степной пахнет смертью, мятой и медом. Мы пьем за любовь, за правду, за наше счастливое детство. Пьем, не щекаясь, из гильз от гранатомета.
Вся русская литература — это война. Поэзия там, где больно.
Победим, у нас нет других вариантов. Иначе эта вся свора размотает нас на тряпки. Так что нам придется побеждать.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. I want to read to you from an Israeli official what he is telling Lebanon. Okay, so this person whose quote I'm about to read is Israel's UN ambassador. His name is Danny Dannon. He's talking to the Lebanese people, and he just said, quote, "You and your government have a choice to make. Confront Hezbollah today or watch as your country is dragged into chaos and destruction." So that's the message, I guess the official message, because he is the U.S. ambassador to the United States, to the people of Lebanon about their current situation. Leila Hatoum is joining us now to respond to this. She's a geopolitical analyst, and she's the editor of chief of MENA Uncensored. Leila, I want to get to that, but before we get to that, we've got some breaking news here I want you to tell me about. I'm scouring here the internet, and I see that a pro-Palestinian activist named Sarah Wilkinson has just been arrested by the police in the UK. They have raided her home. Is she associated with your fact-finding and journalistic enterprise?
Well, yes. First of all, thank you for having me over here and for tackling this important subject. Sarah Wilkinson is, in fact, our roving reporter. She's been covering the Middle East for us, especially the fight that's the conflict and the genocide that's happening in Gaza, the ongoing Israeli onslaught against the Palestinians over there. And Sarah has not only been a staunch supporter of humanity and human rights activists, but also a strong supporter of the Palestinian cause for the past 50 years. She's a 61-year-old grandmother who is also a veteran journalist and an activist. And today at 7:30 a.m. in the morning, in her remote village where she lives alone, she was raided by dozens of anti-terrorism police officers who amount more than the number of people living in that village to arrest her on terrorism charges just because she supports the resistance in Palestine. I mean, come on, give me a break. A 61-year-old grandmother who's a veteran journalist and accredited journalist and a human rights activist, And in a village that basically is, the number of villagers over there is less than the anti-terrorism police that they sent to arrest
her. So all she is somebody who supports the Palestinian cause. In other words, you're saying, as far as you know, she's never been there to fight for, she's not pro-Hamas, she hasn't stated a position. I guess what I'm getting at here is, what could they have reached to accuse her of terrorism while she's living in England?
Well, they're claiming that her posting on social media supports terrorism because she supports the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian resistance. At one point in time, if she stepped over, or if she irritated an Israeli, they will go complain to the UK government, and the UK government will go after her, much like they did basically when they went after Richard Midhurst last week. They arrested Richard Midhurst, another accredited journalist, among other activists as well. There's a crackdown on activists. Anybody who speaks pro-Palestinian cause, they would be arrested. But in Sarah's case, they brought in charges, terrorism charges. That means at one point in time, she can go to jail for 2 years just for saying that I am against the onslaught that's happening in Gaza.
I'm just, final question on this, because I'm thinking, I've seen protests in the UK where thousands of people have been protesting for the ceasefire and for Palestinians, and against the massacre that's being perpetrated by Israel. Why would they arrest her and not those other thousands of people? What is it about her that makes her so special?
She is a very influential figure on social media. She has 250,000 followers, but they are all real followers. She doesn't have bots. And at the same time, recently, over the past week, she has been tackling the issue of vaccines and the fact that the Israelis are banning, basically, they're stopping any possibility of having a humanitarian pause or a truce to allow for vaccination to come in and be administered to the children in Gaza who are suffering from a widespread of polio variant type 2, which was basically spread by the Israelis into Gaza at one point. So when she mentioned that over the past week, suddenly we have anti-terrorism police raiding her home, arresting her, and we didn't know where she was until later on in the day when we found out that she's being held at Shrewsbury Police Station. And she managed to see her lawyer after that.
You know, there's been books written about this. It said that, I think it was in Brave New World, that we would get to a place in our society where we would have thought police. People would arrest you for what you think. And obviously, we don't have the facts all in this case, so we should not conjecture. But man, it certainly sounds like this woman is being arrested for what she thinks and what she says and not for what she does. And that just doesn't seem... it just doesn't seem right. And I hope that the UK, maybe they have a perfectly good explanation for this. We'll wait and see. Meanwhile, back to the point.
The charges, there's none. They just went after her for what she expressed on social media. Sad.
It is sad, and it's wrong. Let's go back to what's going on. This week, we've got a flurry of attacks. We've got flurry of condemnation. We've got a lot of action going back and forth again. As you and I had discussed in the past, there was a quiet time. Now it seems like there's not a not-so-quiet time between both Lebanon, Hezbollah, and the IDF. Can you characterize for us what's happening in that situation right now?
Well, as we said during our past interviews, Hezbollah carried out its retaliation for the Israeli assassination of one of Hezbollah's generals in Beirut's southern suburbs. So the retaliation came in earlier this week, and it was massive because they managed to hit deep inside the Israeli entity, 110 kilometers into the Israeli entity. They hit a military base. Hezbollah managed to hit a military base that's a base for the Mossad and the infamous 8200 unit that's responsible for espionage, online basically propaganda, among other issues. So they managed to hit that base, and the Israelis, until now, they haven't spoken about who was the target. Hezbollah said that if they are satisfied with the result, once they get the results, because they do have intel on the ground, they will consider this file closed. But if they are not satisfied with the kind of people that they managed to hit, then they're going to open another phase of retaliation and a third phase, etc. The retaliation is one thing. Supporting the Gaza front, basically, because Lebanon is a support front to the Gazans, to the Palestinians in Gaza, continued. It never stopped. And yesterday, the day before, and even after the retaliation until today, Hezbollah continued to escalate its attacks against the Israeli entity using short-range missiles and guided missiles. Today, we saw them attack multiple, basically more than five Israeli outposts and barracks, as well as the settlements along the northern front, which are in the within 10-kilometer radius from the blue line, which is the withdrawal line of the Israeli occupation forces from South Lebanon back in 2000. It was demarcated in 2000. So they hit Metula settlement, for example, and they used guided missiles. Somebody asked me in a space, why did they use guided missiles in that case when they were targeting the settlements? And they didn't use guided missiles. They only used Katyushas against the military barracks. And I told them, the Israeli occupation forces take refuge sometimes in civilian homes inside the settlements. So instead of hitting haphazardly, Hezbollah actually uses guided missiles because their fight is against the military, not the civilians. And that's why when Nasrallah came out with his speech after the retaliation, he said, we targeted military outposts and bases because we don't want to target the civilians, unlike our enemy who's targeting our civilians.
Wow. So this comment from the ambassador to the United States, we're down to a minute here, but can you characterize that kind of statement where he's telling the people of Lebanon, look, he seems to be saying, if you don't get rid of Hezbollah, we're going to go in there and get rid of Hezbollah and you. Threat?
As a Lebanese who actually witnessed and covered the 2006 Israeli aggression on the ground in South Lebanon at the time for the Daily Star newspaper, I can tell him one thing. Please try. I mean, they had their whole Merkava tanks burned out in Lebanon. They went away crying. They asked for that ceasefire afterwards. They were the ones who pushed for 1701. They couldn't push Hezbollah away from north of the Litani River. Hezbollah stays until today directly by the blue line attacking the Israelis, right? So the whole idea is that they hit with every single point that they tried to make or target that they put. So they're now telling us that they want to come in. Please go ahead. I mean,
we're going to monitor it. And thanks to you for being there and being able to give us a perspective that is too often not heard, at least not in the Western media. Thank you so much, Leila, and good luck. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
That's our show. Remember to always be looking outside your own box when it comes to truth, because as you can find out when you watch this show, truths, we think, don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.